Hello, my peeps, and welcome back to Workday Playdate with Improve It. I am your host, Erin Deal. And if you're new to the show, this is the show where leadership meets laughter and where we take the complicated parts of work and make them feel a whole lot more human. Now, this month, we are shining a big Broadway spotlight on one powerful theme, the empathetic leader. Today's episode is spicy. Today's episode is juicy. Today is the peanut butter and jelly of growth and discomfort, because we are talking about the conversations we avoid. The ones where your stomach flips, your palms sweat, and you would rather tap dance on hot Legos than speak up in a meeting. Hard talks are part of leadership, but somehow we treat them like a haunted house. We inch towards the door, then we freeze. And friend, this is where today's guest comes in swinging the improv mic. Now, if you don't know what we do at Improve It, we are an improv-infused talent development company for the new generation of work. That is what we do. We're Workday Playdate with Improve It. And in improv, the rule number one is show up and say something. In the workplace, more and more people are showing up and saying nothing. Hina's research uncovered something wild. One in three employees would rather scrub a toilet than ask for help at work. I repeat, they would prefer a scrub brush over a sentence. And let me tell you something, leaders are carrying the same burden. 43% of executives believe that they need to do everything alone. That is the corporate version of going on stage solo with no scene partner and no script. Nothing good gets created that way. Collaboration fades, innovation shrinks, trust evaporates, and the price tag is up to $500 billion a year in turnover, isolation, and miscommunication. So yes, my peeps, we are going there today. The workplace does not have a communication problem. It has a courage problem. So here's the epiphany. Awkward is not the enemy. Silence is. Growth does not happen in comfort. It happens when we leave home base and take a swing. Now, in improv, the scene only moves forward when somebody makes a move. Leadership works the same way. Now, hard conversations are not punishment. They are progress. They build psychological safety. They improve performance. They save relationships. And they are a superpower of empathetic leaders. Now, who is brave enough to teach us how to stop doing or dodging these moments, I should say? Our guest today, Hina Pryor. Hina was the number one leader at a $2 billion executive search firm for over 14 years before becoming a top-rated global success keynote speaker. She writes a popular column for Inc. magazine. She is a Success Magazine Woman of Influence, a Glassdoor Work-Life Pro, a LinkedIn Learning Instructor, and a two-time TEDx speaker. Her book, Good Awkward, has won 18 awards and was named a Kirkus Best Book of the Year. And if all of that wasn't enough, she is also a 32nd generation Pakistani princess, which comes with absolutely no perks, and she is an incurable chocoholic. This is from her, okay? This is from Hina, and I love that fact. She is funny, she is bold, she is brilliant, and today she is here to help us strengthen our social muscle so we stop high-fiving people who are actually telling us to stop talking. Hina, welcome to Workday Playdate. Let's play. Okay, my peeps, we got somebody real fun coming in the sandbox, jumping on in, going down the slide. It's time for our play date with Hina Pryor. Hina, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me. I want to go down a slide. I'm like, can we do that for real?
I know, we should. You know what I also love is swinging. I haven't gone on a swing set in so long, and I did it the other day, and I was like, man, this is a childhood thing that needs to live on.
Yeah. Okay, I also did it the other day, and I realized that my almost 44-year-old body hadn't done that in a while. And I was like, this didn't used to make me nauseous. now it kind of does. So
a leg bump is different in your 40s. I'm 42. Yeah,
a little bit of a bummer. Little bummer discovery.
Yep. I feel that real hard. We're a little sorer after playgrounds these days, but that's okay. We're here now. And I'm so grateful. I loved researching you. I was telling you this before we hit record on the show. I love it when people have their ish. I'm going to say shit. Okay. So this is earmuffs, everyone. Okay. I love it when people have their shit together and you just have like this beautiful, beautiful marketing kit. And I was like, oh, she made my job so easy. But I also went and did a little digging and you're just doing all the things. So kudos to you for being on it.
Thank you. It's the devil's in the details. And so I appreciate you noticing. Thank you for noticing.
You have been noticed. I was like, I'm going to tell her this stands out. So, all right, coming into the show today, we are talking all about having hard talks and why we dodge them. And I want to just stop for a minute and set an intention before we get on that playground and just take a deep breath and come up with one word that you want to give or receive during our time together today. Is there one word that comes to mind for you as our intention for today?
Can I do two? It's an adjective. It's an adjective on the one word.
Yes.
It's
yes.
Complete presence.
Oh, okay. Tell me more about that.
Part of my superpower as a speaker, a writer, is I can hold a lot of balls at once. I'm a great juggler, and I can be someone who is pulled in 1,000 different directions and not get overwhelmed by it. And so anytime I have an opportunity to be singularly focused and just in one place, focused on one person, is such a gift. It feels like I'm on vacation. And so I want to give myself that gift today. So that's my intention. And I hope that it's in service of you and the listeners as well.
I love it. I actually needed that. I needed that as a moment to come back. So selfishly, I took a little something from that as well, because presence is a gift, right? Like, it's literally all we have. And without it, and I know how you feel, juggling all the balls is so hard. And the fact that we get to sit down today and just take a step back from the grind of the day-to-day and the amazing things that you're doing in the world and just have a conversation is a true gift. So I'm going to remember that too. So let's go, Hannah. Okay. So I'm like, let's go. So let's talk about one of the things I found in my research is that you teach that our social muscles have atrophied. Okay, so what in the world happened? How did our communication muscles get so flabby? And I'm in my 40s, as I mentioned, so I got the flabby arm going on. So how did our communication muscles get flabby like my arm?
Yeah. First of all, your arms do not look flabby. Second of all, this is one of those things where when people hear this term social muscle, when we start to talk about this, they think, oh, she must be talking about introverts and shy people. Mm-hmm. Friends, I am neither of those things. I am fully extroverted and as friendly as they come. I'm basically a puppy in human form. So this is not about, you know, introverts or shy people. What we've actually discovered is over the last few decades, there has been a measurable decline in our social muscle strength. So social muscle strength, we can define it as our ability to keep our interactions, our meaningful conversations, those difficult types of communications strong, because we are not used to it. We are actually experiencing diminishing practice in those types of conversations. So think about your physical muscle. If you don't go to the gym for a long time and then you try to pick up a 300-pound weight, Godspeed. That's not going to feel good. You're probably going to want to avoid it. You're not going to try it at all, quite frankly.
That's a lower back problem waiting to happen.
Exactly, right. Yes. So it's a form of fitness. It's a form of muscle building. Today, why is this happening, even for extroverts? Well, pandemic taught even extroverts that we can start to have atrophy in these muscles. So let's just make it real. Do you remember when you came back from your very first, you know, kind of being at home for a long time and you tried to be around people?
Oh my God,
and you were like, What are we doing?
Happening?
Are we, right? Are we talking? I can't read your face. Are we fist bumping? Yeah. Like, because it was a lack of practice. And research from decades ago, not just pandemic research, but people have studied astronauts, polar explorers, people who are more isolated in their jobs. And they find that after a lack of use of these social cues and social interactions, people can forget how to do some of this stuff. They are out of practice of reading gestures and cues and energy. And we are noticing this in spades. Add to that technology. Yeah. Add to that five generations in the workforce. And we are seeing this in spades. And so we have to be really, really thoughtful and careful about what we want to prioritize going forward.
Oh my God, I love it, because I even think about the hyperconnectivity of social media and how we are constantly like, here's my phone. Okay, I'm holding up my phone for those of you who cannot see. I have this connection device in my hand, but I have to tell you, there are times, as I'm going to speak for myself, that I feel lonelier than ever. And I think that when you mentioned the pandemic, that just, I'm sure everybody can remember where they were in like March, April of 2020, like such a time. I mean, I don't know about you, but I was like Zooming with people from high school who I haven't talked to in forever. It was like, all of a sudden everybody's like, oh my God, I want to talk on Zoom, you know? And it became a weird muscle of like, okay, I'm talking to people, but there's no real social connection. I also just want to ask your opinion on this, pure curiosity. I came back from the pandemic and I could not do small talk anymore. I was like, I literally want to, instead of you telling me about your day and how you are and the weather, I want to know what's in your diary. Like, what's your deepest, darkest secret?
Yeah.
Explain that. Like, what is that?
Yeah.
What does that have to do with coming back from this space?
Yeah. Honestly, there's two camps of this. Most people started to build a lack of tolerance for what they believed was low value conversation. So either one of two things happened. They decided just not to have it at all. They're like, listen, I prefer my puppy over this like low value conversation. Or they crave, in your case, Erin, I think I'm more like you, they crave something real. We're like, if the pandemic taught us anything, it's not to phone it in anymore. So we had some pretty different, you know, polar reactions to it. But the thing that's interesting, what you were talking about with social media is, you know, I say this in some of my keynotes, is we've never been more technologically connected.
Right.
I'm connected to a lot of people. I can access them real quick and wish them happy birthday and look at their cute puppy. But the numbers are that people are feeling more socially disconnected.
Yeah.
They can't tell who has their back. I love Esther Perel is a relationship therapist, but she's bringing a lot of her conversation to the workplace. And I love her one quote that she says. She says, you can have 1,000 friends on Facebook and no one to feed your cat.
Okay, that one hit.
Yeah. The workplace equivalent is hundreds and thousands of friends on LinkedIn and no one who has your back at work, right? So the Esther Perel quote is, you can have 1,000 friends on Facebook and no one to feed your cat.
Okay, that right there needs a moment, because that is so true. And I think that the vanity metrics of social media, the vanity of this community at your fingertips, is that we're all hiding behind a screen and we're not connecting in real life. So these muscles really are atrophying. We really are getting flabby arm muscles, like me in my 40s with our social cues. Okay. So I want to talk about this, because you did a study that showed that 1 in 3 employees, this is awesome, by the way, would rather, it's not awesome, but the
it's
way
depressing.
It's depressing, yeah. But I like this statistic.
Yeah.
1 in 3 employees would rather clean a toilet than ask for help. And you're somebody who teaches communication for a living. What was your reaction when you saw that? I mean, and I said awesome in a way of like, this is a jarring fact, not that this is awesome in reality.
Right. Unbelievable.
Yes.
Right. If anybody's curious about the research study, if you go to socialmusclereport.com, it'll give you access to the free white paper. But when that particular statistic came out, so 1 in 3 working Americans would rather clean a toilet than ask for help at work, I had two reactions simultaneously. Number one, oh my God, that's wild and really sad. And number two, I'm not surprised.
Yeah.
I'm not surprised. Yeah. We've gotten so used to trying to go it alone. We're in the era where people would rather ask a ChatGPT companion to act as their therapist versus asking a friend what they should do, right? And so when I first got this finding back, I'll be honest, I was like, this can't be. That's got to be exaggerated. I had a chance to present some of my findings on a New York TV show. And so the news station, they didn't tell me that they actually went, you know how sometimes there's news programs, the daytime TV, they'll go like out on the street and do interviews. So they said, okay, Henna, before you came on, we actually did our own version of that question out on the street in New York City. They, in their version, 50% of people would rather clean a toilet than ask for help at work. And the fact that their answer was so quick and immediate, they're like, oh God, no, rather clean a toilet. I don't want to ask people for help at work. Like, it's mind blowing. But this, again, isn't so surprising. Think about the world that we live in. I don't have to talk to people today if I don't want to. So Erin, I have the good fortune of talking to you, but if I, after this, don't want to, I can order my lunch on DoorDash. I can get my groceries on Instacart. I can, you know, swipe whatever direction if I wanted to go on a date. I've been married for 20 years, but I could, you know, I could DM my colleagues. I don't have to talk to someone today, let alone ask for help. So it's become very difficult for us to climb out of this systemic change that we found ourselves in. And we really need to be proactive if we want to make sure that things don't continue to go in that direction.
Oh my God. Okay. This, I mean, your research and the things that you talk about and what you're bringing to the world is so important. And I think any leader listening right now can attest to this, because I think a lot of people feel like they have to have all the answers. They don't need to ask the help for help. Asking for help makes them look weak. So let me ask you this. In improv, we say that the scene works because everyone contributes. Why is it so hard for leaders to ask for help or say, I don't know?
Yeah, I think you kind of touched on this already. It's an incorrect perception of what that represents, right? Somehow people have gotten very confused about what asking for help means. They think somehow it shows a sign of their ineptitude or incompetence or their ability to handle it on their own. When in fact, research study after research study proves that that is not the conclusion people jump to. In fact, it can be quite the opposite. There's a really interesting psychological phenomenon called the Franklin effect, which says when you ask someone for help, it actually makes you look more favorable in their eyes. It creates this feeling in that person of like, oh, they value what I have to say. And in fact, not only does it not make you look weak, it actually makes them feel really good. It brings a warmth to the interaction and makes them more likely to do the same for you in the future. We've gotten into a really weird place. I feel like as a keynote speaker, you know, we're coming towards the end of 2025, the time of our recording, but I've had a bunch of conferences and the theme has been one insert company name here, right? Mm-hmm. Or one insert industry name here. And I would ask the meeting planners, what does that mean? Like one, whatever. And they always say the same thing. They're like, our people work in silos.
Mm-hmm.
They don't talk to each other cross-departmentally. They don't interact with each other. So then I would start asking the people, why is that? And you know what they would say? They would say, well, I know, Henna, I know it would be helpful for me to talk to people across departments, but I don't want to bother people. When did teamwork become bothering people? So I think we just have to call this out, right? As practitioners, as HR leaders, as people leaders, we need to be sure to say out loud to our teams, let's not confuse what is the expected team dynamics with bothering people. Yes, we've all got stuff to do. Yes, we're all busy. And if we create a culture where every time we ask someone for a piece of advice, a piece of feedback, support, help, that we think it's bothering people, that's starting a cycle that's really hard to come back from.
Okay, I love this. Can we? Okay, let's do a little play date right here, because right now I'm just thinking about teams that I know that have this same issue. And because I feel like now most teams have a remote portion of their business or not are not in office, or some people are not in office, it is problematic. So let's say I work in accounting, which would not be where I work, but let's just say that's where I work. And and you work on the marketing team and you really need some information from me, but you're not really sure how to ask for help. Because if by asking me for help, it shows that you might not know a certain, you might not know a certain number that you might need to know. What is one way you could come to me and say, hey, accounting department, I need help. Could you help me? What is the intro or an icebreaker question that we could use?
Yeah, I have two ideas on this one. So it depends on what the concern is, right? So it depends why you're worried about asking that. So let's say scenario number one is I don't want to come across as incompetent, right? Yes. So let's just pretend, okay, so Erin, you're in accounting, I'm in marketing. Yep. So I have this question and I want Aaron's opinion. Maybe I'll say something like, hey, would love your help on something. I have my own ideas on this question, but I would love a little what would Aaron do moment.
Ooh, okay. Nobody's ever asked me that. We can make bracelets, WWED. But I would love to help you. How can I help? What do you have?
Right. But do you see the distinction here is I'm not saying I need your help because I can't do it. I'm saying I have this question. I have some, you know, maybe hypotheses or ideas, but I value your opinion and I would love like a quick, what would Aaron do here? I'm really elevating you and your expertise and your advice. It doesn't make me look like I don't know what the heck I'm talking about, but it elevates you and it shows that I value your perspective. It's a gentler entry point. The other one, and this is the one that's really the heart of a lot of my work, is get over the awkwardness of not knowing and just say, hey, listen, name it. Say, this feels a bit awkward to ask because part of me feels like I should know, but I'm finding myself stuck here. Just saying that takes all that power and all that tension out of this request, and it normalizes it as a human-to-human experience. We've all felt like that. You felt like that. I felt like that. And so just by putting it in the air, it releases all of the tension associated with the ask.
Hannah, okay, when I found out the name of your book, Good Awkward, I was like, this is like the name of my life. If I were to write a book about myself, this would be my autobiography. Okay, yeah. And here's what I know to be true about even just saying this might be awkward is that when you call it, it's almost like a self-deprecation that people really feel like they can let their guard down with. It's like when you feel like you don't know. Here's the real truth, and the real truth that, as Oprah Winfrey said, what I know to be true is no one knows everything. No one knows. And I tell my team this all the time. Like, we are literally, like, this podcast was made up. Our company, Improve It, I created it.
We all made it up. Everything's made up.
Everything is made up. So no one has all the answers. Like, no one on this planet has the answers. So just by you coming to me and saying, this might be awkward, Aaron in accounting, could you help me? I'm like, you know what? God, I'm so glad she said that. I consider myself awkward too. And I've got a lot of awkward ass. I'm going to help her because she's down to earth and real. And that right there just breaks the ice. And I think is such a great touch point and a very tangible thing for the peeps listening today to take with them. Because I think, first of all, not having all the answers is a reality, and just getting down to the earth. And it comes back to like that small talk and then opening the diary. You're like right there. You're like, this might be awkward. And right there, my little radar went up. I'm like, ding, ding, ding. That's my person. I'm going to talk to her now. And I feel like I can let my guard down too. And I might, and Aaron in accounting might not have all the answers for you. Right. And that's okay too.
Well, I think what people need to know, and this is a really important part of this work, and this shakes out in the research, I think when we feel awkward about something, we tend to feel like, okay, well, that's our own self-doubt. That's our own insecurity. The most confident people you know feel awkward all the time.
Yes.
They don't get to avoid it. They just have worked on improving their comeback rate.
Yes.
Meaning they don't get hooked by it. They feel those feelings just as acutely as everyone else, but they've learned how to move through them quickly. They've learned how to pop that bubble fast by not letting it linger. If a moment happens, sometimes they happen unexpectedly. They learn how to use humor or improv tools or something to move through it faster. It's about speed of moving through. It's about comeback rate. It's not about not having them, because awkwardness exists in uncertainty. If you're going to eliminate it, good luck. Tell us all how you've solved for uncertainty, right?
Yes.
We'd like to know,
yes.
But it's not possible.
Oh my God. Okay. And we in improv say, well, we'd say here at Improve It, one of our mantras is get comfortable with the uncomfortable. And I love that you said that the less comfortable we get, I saw this, the more successful we become. And I think that comeback rate is so true. I started thinking about this the other day, just in my own life, just like full real life moment here, because as you know, as a keynote speaker, as an author and business owner, like all of the things, you got to take a lot of risks. And sometimes the bigger risks, the more risk, more champagne, right? But more risk also means more people are probably going to be upset with you along the way. You're going to piss some people off along the way. You're not going to be perfect along the way. And so this reminder was selfishly yet again for me, Hannah. I needed this reminder.
No.
But for anybody listening, I mean, take what you need, because It's so true. The more successful we are, the more uncomfortable we have to become. That's from you. I did not say that. I saw that as one of your touch points. Hey, my peeps, I hope you're enjoying my conversation with Hannah Pryor. We will be right back after a quick break from our sponsors. Thank you for supporting those who support the show. All right, my peeps, I want to tell you a little something we created at Improve It that will lighten up your workplace like a standing ovation. It is called the Empathetic Leader Keynote. And here's what we believe. Leadership is not your title. It is your energy, your presence, your daily actions. People are not leaving jobs. They are leaving leaders who are drained, disconnected, or stuck in scarcity mode. So we built a keynote that flips that script. Now, this is a high-energy, interactive, improv-infused hour that teaches leaders how to move from limitation to abundance, from reactivity to self-awareness, from pressure to purpose. You will discover your positive relational energy and walk away with tools, clarity, and the ideal day methodology to put it all into practice. If your organization is ready to create a culture that attracts talent, grows trust, and inspires action, reach out to us at learntoimproveit.com. That's learntoimproveit.com. And let's bring this keynote to your team. You are listening to Workday Playdate on the Passion Struck Network. Now back to my conversation with Hannah Pryor. Okay, I want to talk about this, the full story of your high five moment. Okay, I want to paint a scene. Okay, your brain said connection. His face said, please stop talking. What was going through your head? Tell us the story.
I still think about this one all the time. So early in my book, I share the story of how, you know, post-pandemic, it was one of my first in-person meetings with a leader that I was trying to pitch, right, for my speaking services, some training. And it was, you know, again, I hadn't been around people in person very much at that point. So we have this meeting. I think it's going pretty well. I am at a point in the discussion where I'm giving it my all, right? I'm telling him all the cool things we can do, how I'm going to add all this value. And he puts his hand up. So for those who are just listening, you know, open palm in front of his face, he puts his hand up and I like, yeah, man, I like give him like a boisterous high five because like, he's loving this and he looks confused. And so I'm like, okay. And he goes, Hannah, I was putting my hand up because I was trying to get you to stop.
Oh my God. Oh my God.
I still get warm when I think about that.
I'm sweating for you right now.
Wow, way to misread that one. And again, in that moment, there's one of two options. You can melt into a puddle and decease right there in the middle of, you know, unrealistic, that's exaggerating, but you can lose your cool and have the rest of the meeting feel like, you know, abject hell.
Yep.
Or you can do what thankfully I had been trying to work on for years at this point, which was work on my comeback rate. So I immediately, while, you know, I did feel red and I felt embarrassed quickly, I immediately said, oh God, way to misread that situation. That's embarrassing. I'm so sorry. He laughed. I laughed. Both of our shoulders relaxed. And Erin, I would argue that moment brought us closer.
Yes.
Because when you have that shared moment of laughter, you know, there's chemical cocktails, there's the oxytocin, there's the dopamine, where you have this shared chemical social bond reaction. Not only did it end up moving forward with him, we're still friends to this day, and we still laugh about it. He's like, you're going to give me a high five?
Like, no, yes.
I'm not.
Such a good story.
But it's those moments, right? It's those human moments now that we need to stop trying to blur away. There's power in them.
So much power. So much power. I love that story. My cheeks are like that because that is the good awkward. That is the good awkward right there. Like, and it full stop, good awkward. So, okay. I want to talk solutions. We got a lot of people leaders on the line who love some solutions, some tangible takeaways. So what are two, or you could give us three, practical ways teams can rebuild their social strength this week without the trauma, the tears, or the mandatory trust falls? What are some things that they can do that can help them refine those social muscles and come back to collaboration versus silos?
Yeah. So I'm going to first quickly, before I give you some concrete solutions, let me just give you a quick, why do we need to do this? Because sometimes what I'm about to suggest, people will be like, we need to do that. I was born in 1982. I'll be 44 soon. And I grew up playing in the streets with my friends. I grew up playing at the playground a lot, where part of the fabric of our upbringing was social negotiation.
Yes.
We played with our friends and it's like, now you're the boss. Nope, now you're in charge. Now the rules changed. We grew up learning how to do that. There is an entire generation that did not grow up that way. And so HR leaders and people leaders have actually a new effort ahead of them. So one exercise I suggest is build in time in your workday. So it could be 5 minutes at the top of a meeting to build in exercises like a micro disagreement drill. Meaning we're going to put an issue on the table and this group on this side is going to take position A, this side is going to take position B. Doesn't mean they believe it. They just have to pick a position and practice what it feels like to disagree, right? To be in conflict, to be in difference of opinion. We can also do things like cracked egg stories, which is everybody goes around and shares an example of something that, you know, splat on their face that week, something that didn't go the way it planned, you know, blunders, missteps. We need to actually carve out space for people to give airtime to these things, because if we don't, we sit at our desks alone, especially when we're hybrid, and we're like, it's just me. I'm the only one who keeps screwing this stuff up. We don't see each other doing it anymore. So these types of exercises at the beginning, they now require intentional space. And again, it doesn't have to be half an hour, it doesn't have to be an hour, 5 minutes at the top of the meeting, but people need reps. People need to make this an out loud practice. So that's suggestion number one. Any questions before we go to number two?
I love the micro disagreements so much. And as a recovering people pleaser, like, this really resonates with me on a real level. I was born in 1983. Just want to point this out to you too. And I feel like we are, my son's six. I'm watching a different generation. You know, everybody's getting a trophy on the soccer field. You know, that's really what is happening right now. And I do think he struggles with this. I'm watching him. I struggle with this. I love it. I want to call out one thing too about the blunders and the fails. I got to add you to our Fail Friday newsletter list, because we do this and we celebrate the crap out of them, because this started out of the pandemic where I felt like I was failing left and right and we just kept going. So micro disagreements in drills. That's number one. I just wanted to highlight that. Number two, let's go there.
Number two is honestly starting to understand that your teams need language. So I think I'm a linguistics obsessed word nerd. I think language has so much power. So how used to are your leaders, and leaders have to model this, or your team members, at saying, okay, I need to talk about something and I feel really awkward about it, right? Or I need to bring something up and I feel like it's really embarrassing, but I know it's important. Right? Being able to say that out loud in the spirit of, it's a qualifier. It's, I understand that this thing that needs to be said is more important, but it's acknowledging I'm having a hard time with it. People sometimes ask, how is that different than vulnerability? Vulnerability is actually higher on the scale of emotional exposure. So vulnerability is, I'm really struggling with this, right? This is extremely hard for me. Versus just to say, you know, Erin, I need to talk to you about something and I'm struggling to find the right words. I feel very awkward about it, but I'm going to do my best and try. So please just forgive me. I feel like I'm just going to give it my best shot. It's just for you on the receiving end. You're like, okay, I'm not going to hold her to a standard of perfection, but I see what she's trying to do and I appreciate it, right? I appreciate that she's trying, even though she's not getting it right.
Can I ask you a question about this and on a personal level, the language?
Yeah.
I am like so about this, right? I love the vulnerability piece. Oh, well, and I love the good awkward moment, right? So what if you're on the receiving end as the leader and you receive what they're feeling awkward about or what they're having trouble with? And it's almost like something and this is just maybe a personal thing that happened. I'm just going to say that. What if they're receiving something that you're like, okay, you need to move past it. There's nothing I can tell you other than you need to move past it. How do you as a leader respond?
Yeah. Okay. So first things first is when somebody has the courage to do that, I think the very first thing as a leader is don't feel the need to have a full response right away. It can be as simple as, thank you for sharing that with me. I can tell that was hard for you. Let me sit with that for a minute and get back to you. That is honestly one of the bravest things a leader can do, is not feel the need to react right away. Now, listen, that's hard. I am a high achieving, overachieving perfectionist type, and I got applauses for getting straight A's, right? So it's really hard for me not to be like, I have the answer. Here's what I say in response. It's actually very difficult for me to sit on my hands and go, thank you for sharing that. That's, you know, I'm grateful that you had the courage to share that with me. And then once a little space has gone by, it could be that what they need most of the time when people are bringing something like this to you and there's nothing that can actually change, what they're looking for is validation of what they're feeling, not necessarily a solution or agreement to their experience. So again, I come to you, Erin, and I'm like, listen, this is really awkward for me to say, but I am feeling like, you know, the pace of the work is something I'm struggling to keep up with. And I just wanted to make sure I communicate that to you. Okay. You, Erin, are thinking to yourself, well, Hannah, that's the pace of work. So like, there's not much we can do about that. You know, maybe you say, thank you for sharing that with me. I can tell that was important. And then later that day you say, hey, listen, I just wanted to validation first. I just wanted to validate that, you know, this is a real experience for you. What you're experiencing as the pace, I can tell it's hard. You know, and I sat with this for a little bit, and I think what I recognized is, you know, from a solution standpoint, there's not much we can do about the pace. So let's break this down into what else we can look at. You know, what surrounds the conversation of pace, right? But it's people get a little hung up with, if I validate them, am I somehow giving them a trophy? Am I agreeing with them? Validation and agreement are not the same thing. Awkwardness is an emotion. Embarrassment is an emotion. And when you validate someone's emotion, you're not agreeing with their perception of the experience. You're just validating that emotion as being real. And that often can bring people's guard down and they get more open to solutions or problem solving. So I would say that's the one step that too many people skip over. And if I can suggest any one first step, is to spend a little more time on that one.
Okay. I really love that. And I know that to be true. That reminder was so needed. And I hope it helps somebody else today. So thank you. I needed that. I needed all of that, Hannah. We needed that. The peeps needed that. So thank you.
I talk about it because I need it too, to be clear. So
I mean, isn't it funny? Like, you teach what you need to know. Like, I look at a lot of the things that we've created and I'm like, okay, because that's when I was going through that time that was created. Hey, my peeps, I hope you're enjoying my conversation with Hannah Pryor. We will be right back after a quick break from our sponsors. Thank you for supporting those who support the show. You are listening to Workday Playdate on the Passion Struck Network. Now back to my conversation with Hannah Pryor. Well, let me ask this. You know, we got some conflict avoiders, myself included, who are listening. What is a small baby step they could literally do today to like dip a toe into the good awkward? What is something without like the smallest little baby step, if they're not ready to take a big jump and be vulnerable and say, hey, this might be awkward, or approach them with, you know, the what would Erin do approach? What is like a tiny, tiny little thing they could dip a toe in?
Yes. Okay. So a lot of conflict avoidant folks are behaving in that way because they have overpriced the perceived heat of a conversation. Mm-hmm. We're not very good estimators as human beings. You know, sometimes we're right, but often we overprice the heat of a conversation. So Matt, you know, that analogy of like the anticipation of ripping off the Band-Aid is so much worse than ripping off the Band-Aid. Conflict is typically the same way. Just thinking about how it could go. Our human brains, whenever we're faced with ambiguity or uncertainty, we magnify, we amplify. We're like, oh, this is going to go so much worse than I expect it's going to go. When in reality, it's not to say that sometimes it doesn't go that badly. Sometimes it does, but statistically, most of the time, it doesn't go that badly. We overestimate the level of conflict or the heightened degree of conflict we're going to face. So what I tell people is one of the best ways to hedge against this is to try to get in the habit of creating some small stakes social repetition, especially in moments of micro conflict. So example, you're at a restaurant, your server gives you the wrong order. There are people I know that would literally, they're vegetarian and they get a steak and they will not send it back, right? That's an example of, in that moment, could you practice what I call micro conflict, which is hey, this doesn't feel great, but the perceived heat, this server's going to hate me. They're going to spit in my food. Really how often does that actually happen? If it's the wrong order, you say, I'm so sorry, but I asked for this and I accidentally got that. Do you mind bringing the dish that I ordered? And most of the time they're like, oh my gosh, I'm so sorry. Let me take care of it. Or if your coffee order is wrong at Starbucks, the grocery store, something rang up twice. It sounds ridiculous, but I can't tell you how many people can't manage those micro moments. And then when they need to go ask for a promotion or they disagree with their coworker, good luck.
Right.
Good luck, because you haven't done the small social repetition to prepare you for the larger ones. So the action step is start small. Start small. Don't avoid those moments so that you can build the muscle for those larger conflict moments.
I freaking love it, Hannah. I needed that as well. I have had, you know what? I'm actually getting better at this as a recovering people pleaser. I'm like, I'm 42. If my cocktail is not right, I'm going to send it back. And my husband's like, don't do that. Like, that's just, and I'm like, no, it's a $15 cocktail. I'm like, let's go. I'm sending it. My dirty martini should be cold. Okay.
Right,
and so these are things that I think that I would not have done 10 years ago. So I feel like this, and did I drink dirty martinis in my 30s? Yes. But so, okay. I want to just talk really quickly. Your book, Good Awkward, it talks a lot about these fundamentals and has had so much success. What is one game-changing mindset shift from the book that somebody could use today?
Oh, I think one of my favorite pieces of the research from the book that really was a catalyst for me writing a book about it, because I didn't want to write a book about stuff that people already knew. I'm like, is there anything actually new about this emotion? I think one of the ones that I loved was learning about vicarious embarrassment. So vicarious embarrassment is a phenomenon where some of us rate really high on a very specific type of empathy. It's called easily empathetically embarrassed. So first things first, empathy is a good thing. We need a lot more of it in the United States, around the world. And we're not trying to engineer empathy out of anyone. That said, this certain kind of empathy means that, you know, you might see someone else have a misstep, a blunder. Somebody else is embarrassed and you feel that, like truly feel that head to toe as though it's you. You see somebody blunder on stage and you're like, oh my God, Aaron, I'm going to crawl under this desk right now. Like, I cannot do, you know, this is people who are very high on this EEE, easily empathetically embarrassed. And what people are surprised to learn is that when they're high on that, it actually makes it harder for them to take risks themselves, because they're constantly thinking that other people are judging them. Sorry about the dog. That other people are judging them with the same level of intensity that they're feeling that level of embarrassment. And it's just often not true.
I totally empathize with that, Hannah. And I did, I will say the book that I wrote is called I See You, A Leader's Guide to Energizing Your Team Through Radical Empathy. And empathy is a great, obviously, I love empathy. I agree with you, though, that sometimes we need to allow ourselves a little less of it just so we can make things more palatable for us. So everybody should get a copy of this book. Everyone run out and get a copy of Good Awkward and tell everyone where they can find it, where they can find you, all the things. And wait, we need to know the names of your dogs, because this is in there. This is Good Awkward. This is it.
The Amazon. No. And honestly, Aaron, do not edit this out, because I think this is the most important thing. My dog is actively losing her mind because the Amazon person came and her little doggy door is not open. But this is, in a way, sometimes when these things happens on podcasts, I'm like, you know what? Thank God. Thank God.
Yes.
Because everything else can be edited out and blurred away.
Yes.
This is real life. People
this
who want to be seen as experts still have dogs who lose their mind. Like,
exactly.
Reality. This is embracing Good Awkward. In any case, you can find the crazy dog woman at Hannah Pryor on LinkedIn is my primary playground. Instagram as well. It's just at Hannah Pryor. HannahPryor.com will take you to my website, which will show you links to my Inc. magazine column, my LinkedIn learning courses. But I love making new friends on social. So please do connect, and would love to know some of you.
Yes. Okay, peeps. We'll put it all in the show notes. And then I don't want this conversation to end. I really don't. Because I feel like we have had full presence. We've been super present here today. So this is my last question that I ask every guest. What are you going to do to make your workday more playful today?
You know what? I chase amusement at every corner. So yes, anytime anything is moderately annoying, I really try to find the funny in it. So like, how is this funny? How is there some humor in this? And so I've got a bunch of projects I need to figure the rest of the day. And I know some of them are going to be like, ugh, I don't feel like doing this. So I'm just going to try to find the funny, find the amusement, whether that means, you know, adding a meme to a slide deck or, you know, finding a funny little turn of phrase. But I think anytime I do that, it makes the whole thing feel a lot easier to do.
I love it. You know, we hate humor around here. It's not easy to like it. So
I know these are lies.
These are lies to me. These are all lies. But Hannah, I love getting to know you. You're now a part of our Peeps community. So thank you for being here. Peeps, go check out Hannah anywhere you can. We'll put all those links in the show notes. Hannah, thanks for getting the sandbox and playing today. It was so fun.
Thank you for having me.
Okay, my peeps, what an amazing episode. Hannah, thank you for reminding us that awkward is normal, discomfort is data, and conversations are the currency of strong teams. What a gift. Your presence was truly a gift today. So my peeps, if this episode hits home, please share it with a coworker who types too long of a Slack message instead of having a high 5-minute chat, or the leader who thinks vulnerability is a curse word. This world will get better when we speak up. I am so proud of you for being here. You're listening to Workday Playdate with Improve It. And I want to just remind you to go out, make moves, make mistakes, have hard talks, and keep improving. I'll see you next time.